You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. I have vivid memories of learning cursive in elementary school and figuring out the strokes of each letter in my notebook. I think capital Q was my hardest lift. I had actually had to look it up again this morning. But there is a generation of students who didn't have to learn this style of handwriting. In 2010, cursive began to fade away in K-12 education, back when Common Core began to focus more on keyboard skills for students. In recent years, historians have begun to raise the alarm about the consequences of not being able to read cursive when it comes to learning about the past, because many historical documents are written in this style of penmanship. Just think of the Declaration of Independence. Lawmakers have also begun to take notice. Last year, a new California law now requires cursive instruction during first through sixth grade at some point during that period. A local archivist is seeing these impacts firsthand and argues that the absence of cursive poses a threat to how we remember history. Julie Thomas is an archivist at Sacramento State and joins us with more about her experiences as well as the value of reintroducing cursive into the classroom. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Julie. So how does one become an archivist? Where does that story begin for you?
It usually involves starting as a historian. Melded it with library science. So history and being an archivist is both a science, library science, and an art, which is what history is. And I've been fortunate to be an archivist here at Sac State for 22 years.
So essentially you're the historical memory at Sacramento State.
I'm one of the team. We actually have a university archivist, but yes, we are a team that works together.
That is wonderful. I mean, in this line of work that you're doing and passion, how did you first begin to discover this issue surrounding cursive?
It was before the pandemic, even. I had a student who was doing research on the Japanese-American incarceration experience. We're the home of the Japanese-American archival collection, arguably one of the best in the country. I don't think it's arguable. We are the best. And he came up to me and he said, I need to read this correspondence, but can you translate it for me? And I said, it's here. It's in English. And he said, but it's in cursive. I can't read it. And then I started asking students that I was giving lectures and presentations to let me know, can they read cursive? And as the years went on, less people raised their hands. And the last time, nobody raised their hands, including the professor. Yeah, he was a STEM professor. But regardless, we all need to know how to read historical documents, correct? So now it's just, it is what, here we are. The train has left the station.
What also stood out to me about what you just told me is that you use the word translate for cursive. That's really interesting. I never really thought of cursive in that way before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically going to be a second language. You know, in school, you can take French, Spanish, cursive. Even though it doesn't involve speaking, obviously, but reading and writing it, I think, is going to be important. It's going to end up being a specialization.
Yeah, and even when preparing for this conversation, I realized, oh, wait, do I remember all of the letters, you know, capitalized or lowercase? So just like language, you probably need to keep at it to retain what you learned as a child.
That's exactly right. And that's an issue. I'm going to jump ahead. The National Archives has over 300 million objects digitized. And the issue is you can be a citizen archivist. Anybody can go on and do the translation and transcription, but people who learned it but don't use it, they can't really help with that because it's important that you have correct translations. I'm just going to use that word going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned the Declaration of Independence, but in what ways do we need cursive that we might not initially think about, especially if we're not a student anymore?
Mm-hmm. Most importantly for the primary source documents, they are evidence that something happened. People say we have to collect primary sources and read our history so it, quote unquote, never happens again. Vicky, it always happens again. What primary sources do is provide evidence it did happen. So going back to my example for the Japanese American Archival Collection, we have things from the government. Everything's printed. We have things from the religious groups and the Quakers who helped them. So it's the depth and breadth. Most of the stuff from the incarcerees were handwritten. So you're not getting the whole side of the story. You're just getting the government side and the organizations who printed. In the camps, they had handwriting. So it's so important because you're only getting a slice of the history and it's skewed. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, translations.
Yeah, I was like, what if someone's like, hey, well, there's technology to help. AI is growing. I mean, do I really need to learn cursive? Can't I just use technology to help me out?
Yeah, and it started, as a matter of fact. There are some AI programs out there, and it's precursor, optimal character recognition. The issue is that a lot of handwritten cursive documents, number one, they're smudged. They may have doodles. We call it marginalia, which we love in the archive world. And there is just bad handwriting. When I sign my name, it's just a J with a straight line. So AI can't figure that out right now. But who knows, going down the road.
Well, and also this opens up the possibility that anytime there's something new or even something that is useful, there is the potential that it could be exploited as well. And so I would think it would be good to be able to read cursive yourself instead of perhaps relying on something or someone to translate it for you.
I think you just vocalized my biggest concern is, translations, there's human error. And it just can't. Everything sometimes are, it can
just
be wrong.
Negligent.
Right. But there's so much mis and disinformation out there. So this generation, the Gen Z and with the Alpha starting, they don't see the need. Okay. You don't see the need. But when I say you can't read the Declaration of Independence, you're relying on somebody else to translate it, they may have nefarious purposes for twisting it or leaving out words or replacing a word. And never fails, I see their eyes get big. And they were like, oh, now what are they going to do with that information? I don't know. These are people in their mid-20s. Are they going to go back and start learning what's basically a new language?
Yeah. You mentioned the National Archives and that you started noticing this issue before the pandemic, so 5 or 6 years ago. Is there a larger conversation taking place among archivists and historians like yourself when it comes to cursive?
Not that I'm aware of. Now, that doesn't mean it's not happening, but I do read the trade literature, go to conferences, and it's behind the scenes. It's more kind of, back in my day, and isn't it a shame? But where's the call to action? Is there action that can be taken? I think the National Archives is starting, California and the other 14 states that now require it. That's a good start too, but does it help a whole generation of people who can't read it? We have AI. There are ways we can mitigate it going forward. But again, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah. I also wonder about your profession as well. Do you think the field of being an archivist or a historian may be compromised if there's a generation who doesn't, an up-and-coming generation that doesn't understand cursive?
That's a really great question. And the answer for me is it depends. Because I will translate for some students. If it's 50, 60 pages, I'm going to help them. But if it's 500 pages, no, they're kind of like, my advice is switch your topic, your research topic. So will it be compromised? I can't see how it won't, but I don't know how great that impact will be. but I know there'll be an impact. Mm. It's scary. I think it's scary. I keep referring back to the Japanese-American experience. Prior to World War II, there was a writing that nobody today in Japan can read. It's so antiquated. And the people who can read it have passed away. I have like two people left I know who can read it. So actually, we have scholars from Japan coming to Sac State because a lot of the information letters written in that old handwriting were transcribed by people who could read it too. So they're coming to the United States to learn how to read handwriting from 1944. It's one generation.
Yeah, that doesn't really feel that long ago. You
know? Right, it's not. That's one lifetime.
Yeah. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Julie Thomas, an archivist at Sacramento State University, about the concern among historians after cursive began to fade away in K-12 education. We touched upon this, but there are now newer state laws that are addressing this. California Governor Newsom signed a law in fall of 2023. It took effect January 1, 2024, so we're a year in, that requires teaching cursive at some point between first and sixth grade. You mentioned other states are doing this as well. Is that a signal that people outside of your field or just outside of yourself, they're noticing that this is a problem and they're trying to resolve it?
Yes, I think it has to be. And when I say yes, I'm speculating. How else would they know? Except usually it's parents who are raising the alarm, for sure. But even the laws, what Governor Newsom signed, it was Assembly Bill 446, and it says it's for grades 1 through 6. It's only when the local school board and the actual school district decide it's appropriate.
So it's at each school district's discretion.
Right. So Elk Grove may be learning it differently than Sacramento, which differently from the San Juan. And it's very, I consider, loosey-goosey. There's no federal standards anymore. But that is, I think, one of the misconceptions, too, is that the Common Core was not established by the government. It was established by the National Governors Association and Council of Chief State School Officers. None of these people have boots on the ground. They're making decisions. So we still, you know, that affect every student without thinking about the ramifications. And I'm afraid we still might be in that situation. School district, superintendents, they're not in the trenches seeing what's going on and what the after effects are.
Yeah, especially we're starting to really see that now. And you have noticed it because this started to begin being scaled back in 2010.
Yep.
And so now we have 15 years of really being able to take a pretty hard look at cursive. So for schools or teachers or just adults who are vested in this and want to teach cursive, how would you advise people going about that? I mean, if they're listening to this and then, you know, the alarm bell goes off in their head as well.
Yes. Yes. I think that can be a multi-pronged solution is, I think most importantly, is getting this generation that have lost the skill to realize it's an important skill. Now, do they need to know it fluently, if I can use that word? I don't know if that's the case. But first, the recognition starts that they are at risk of getting a skewed history. And then I think parents. I know a lot of parents who are teaching their kids at home. But that's a heavy lift. The kids, they've got a lot of other things going on, their own homework. And get the teachers, again, boots on the ground to make this, I don't want to say the priority, but at least equal as math and English and everything else they're teaching. So in a dream world, there's many solutions. In the real world, anything we can get, we'll take.
As we wind this conversation down, why are you so passionate about this? I mean, you can clearly hear it in your voice.
Yeah, it is. Well, I'm an ancient and medieval historian, and I find it fascinating that we can read historians, I personally can't, but read cuneiform, a writing from when it was invented 5,000 years ago. We can figure that out. Here it is from 80 years ago. We're losing that skill. So I think for history, it's important, and that it's discoverable. If people don't know how to read it, and it doesn't exist. If nobody knows where it's at and how to read it, it's just a piece of paper, right? So I think for the historical record, as evidence that something happened, it's really important. And if nobody can read it, I'm 62. I'm not going to be around too much longer, right?
Yeah.
I need my nieces and nephews to be able to read it.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, you still can be around for decades more and share your knowledge, but I digress. Finally, where do you see some kind of window or light of optimism? Or do you? And about, we have about 30 seconds
right.
left.
Do I see optimism? I am an optimist. Is that writing and words, which are important, whether they're written or spoken, will continue. I mean, that's what it comes down to, whether this period of time, basically from the 1700s, when cursive started, to today. Hopefully there'll be some specialists who can read it and translate it. The history will survive, just everybody. It won't be democratized, if you will. It'll belong to a few number of people, and we have to rely on them.
Yeah. Kind of like how we began, where literacy wasn't universal as well. I mean, there still are literacy challenges, but the majority of people can read, whereas centuries ago, that wasn't the case.
Exactly.
Julie, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Vicki. Thanks for having me.
Julie Thomas is an archivist at Sacramento State, discussing the concern among historians like herself after cursive began to fade away in K-12 education. Still ahead, Cap Radio Sacramento newsletter quickly became a beloved way to stay connected to the capital city. And today, we're saying goodbye to one of the creative journalistic minds behind the biweekly email drop. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.